There is a savage beast in every man, and it stirs when you put a sword in his hand. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided it was time to rebrand and relaunch just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. Be sure to check www.whitebookpodcast.com for more content, generally in written form. Huge thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for creating this world, FFG for a great game, all of our contributors, and you, the listeners. Contact us on this site, facebook.com, as well as Twitter, or email contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This Creative Commons music is Townfish by Spoons. Welcome back to episode 244 of The White Book. Can you believe that? 244 episodes. It sounds so crazy. This week, I have Team Wright joining me for the first portion of our Wolves of the North review. Gentlemen, why don't we introduce ourselves for Team Wright here. First up, I have Dobler.
Yes, Greg Atkinson, here for a product review for the first time in a long time.
And Patrick. I'm not sure what forum name to use because he told me he was getting ready to change it.
Yep, it has officially been changed. It's just my name now.
Oh, okay.
Patrick Haynes. Yep. Simplified it for everybody. Yeah, well, somebody else in the Discord chat was the Red Viper. So I was like, well, that's just confusing. So I can't have that be my name and his name. So I just changed it to my normal name.
Did you consider going with Oberyn Martell instead?
I could have done that as well, but I just felt like that would maybe be just too many layers, and people might get confused.
Oh, that's and following up, we've got L-Dub joining us.
Hey, everyone. Sorry if you hear me like sniffling in the background. It's not because I'm sick. It's because I made Cajun shrimp and dirty rice, and so it's a little hot. So there you go.
Yeah. I made a kind of a spicy stir fry for dinner myself. So I feel your pain, man.
Well, it's not pain. It's excellent.
Well, I mean, it's a good. If you got it hot
right.
Enough. Okay, well, I don't think we have a ton of official FFG news, though I will prop my, maybe I should say, semi-official articles recently on FFG's page. Go check them out for my thoughts on four melee archetypes to match the Joust, Jaime, Ned, and Shaga. But aside from that, we're hot into regional season, and at least one of our members made it to a regional. I know Luke did, but I realized when I was chatting a moment ago. Patrick, did you make it to one this last weekend?
I did, the same one that Luke was at.
Ah, see? I apologize for skipping over.
It's all right. I played terribly, so we can just pretend I wasn't there.
I was going to say, we can go with our time-tested method of working with the lowest placement up in tournament reports. So it sounds like that would be you first.
Yep, that's me first. Well, I played the infamous Banff deck, the Lanny Leaping Lions jumper, all that shenanigans. Turns out it works pretty well when you see Tywin and or jumper events, but I missed both of those for two games in a row, and then I had a horrible misplay in one game. So I went 3-3, so I was pretty disappointed. But, you know, still a solid deck. Just a little more reliant on a couple cards than I think some other versions of Lannister are. So, yeah, that's pretty much my report.
I have a pretty thorough report written up on the White Book website if you want to go check that out and see my personal experience. Ended up going 4-2. Was 4-1 going into the last round of Swiss, so I was in a win-and-in situation. And then there was some shenanigans with some intentional draws and some really weird math going on that people decided not to do, apparently. And I ended up losing 15-14, which was kind of a heartbreaker, but both my losses were actually by a combined total of 3 power. So Kind of a tough day there, but I made top 16, so it was fun. I also played the Banff, slightly different variant than Patrick's, but I also won two games without Tywin at all. One game in which he was heads on spiked.
Ooh, shots fired at Patrick.
Yeah, I guess you're just better than me, Luke.
That's like about the biggest extent of talking shit that I'll like ever get to.
Well, we'll have to see how Gen Con goes, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think that, I mean, to be fair, in every test game that I played against you the night before when we were all just hanging out, like, you crushed me, so.
Well, you know, the regional's what counts, so.
Nobody's going to Origins?
I might. Well,
Luke Bray is. I am not. It's like a 10-hour drive from Wisconsin, yeah, and that's a lot of hours.
It's only like a 2-hour drive here from central Indiana, but maybe 2.5, but I don't know. I'm getting married this summer, and I may be starting a new job, so there's a lot in flux, so.
Well, any other salient points from the regional there, gentlemen? Interesting observations on the field at large?
There was a ton of Greyjoy. Greyjoy was freaking everywhere. There was more Baratheon than I thought there'd be, which I was actually kind of excited about. I've been sort of on my own testing Baratheon, and turns out still good, considering that Barra Fealty won the whole thing. That was played by Tyler Hockman, who's from the Columbus meta. He's a really good player. All those guys were really fun to hang out with. He beat Sean Becker in the finals. Sean was playing Greyjoy, Lord of the Crossing, and that deck was stupid fast. I mean, it was just disgusting. I saw him beat a Targ Lion in 2 turns.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, it was gross.
Yeah, that is. Yep.
Yeah,
he didn't run Euron, just like all 6 and lower, and like almost no attachments, just all boats and guys and econ.
Yeah, it looked like a pretty solid deck. It was a interesting take on crossing, but I think I really like it. The fact that it's so low curve and is just able to win so quickly is pretty much exactly what you want from a crossing deck. But yeah, I think the biggest observation for the day is Bear Fealty is still good.
Yeah.
So.
And Targ Fealty. Targ Fealty made top 4.
Targ Fealty also still good.
And Stark Fealty was in top 4. That was one of my losses on the day. That was a heartbreaker. That was a tough loss. Anyway, you can read about it on the White Book.
Speaking of Stark, that's kind of exciting because that's what we're here for. We have all the excitement of the wolves in the north just waiting to drop on us. I'm eagerly going to go pick up a couple copies tomorrow as soon as I can lay my grubby little hands on it.
Yeah, me too. I seriously debated coming home tonight and building the Stark deck I have built on Card Game DV using proxies, but I was like, that's like 20 pieces of paper that I'm going to need to write proxies on, so might as well just wait the 24 hours until I can get the box for real.
Okay, well, you know, the cards are here, and I'm just as eager as anybody else, so I think we should really dive in, try to get a review going on these. It's a lot more cards than we have been doing lately in the chapter packs. So we're going to split this one up into 2 pieces. Team Right is going to review the Stark cards with me this week, and Team Left is going to tackle everything else next week. So we'll see how it goes. We also learned our lesson last chapter back that doing a double rotation on these cards in our review is a little bit of overkill and eats up a lot of time. So we're going to try something a little different this time. We're still rating on an A through F system, like the American grading scale. But this time we're just going to rotate around once. Everyone's going to give their little paragraph or so of thoughts and their rating in the first rotation around on the cards. But we're going to kind of keep tabs on the terrible choices that our co-hosts make on these cards so that we can all come back for a couple nice pot shots at each other at the end and let them know what they are terribly wrong about. So, without further ado, I say we get things started here. We've all got it opened up in front of us now. For the rotation this week, how about myself? Then how about Luke, Greg, and Patrick?
Sounds like a plan. Oh, yes. I'm already happy about the
See,
order.
There you go.
Oh, you're look welcome. At you. You first get a good card.
I didn't even pay attention to who got what. We'll see if the order sticks. Thankfully, Tommy's not on.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, so first up, we have King Rob's host. This is our first unique army. It's loyal and an 8 cost, 8 strength, military and power icon. It also has a no attachments keyword. And it has the reaction, after you win a military challenge in which King Rob's host is participating, move one power from the losing opponent's faction card to an attacking card. 2 power instead if there is a war plot card revealed. I have to say, I'm not sold on this one for 8 cost. I feel like it's kind of behind the curve compared to the 7 costers we've got right now. It's nice it can be reduced by fealty because Stark still kind of tends that direction with a lot of their kind of insular effects. And it's an interesting theme that they're getting all this put power on their characters stuff. But the way things are right now, the war plots don't have a ton of income. I'm a little wary of being able to play this when it can't be reduced by something like a noble cause. So I'm going to just give King Rob's host. I'm gonna go with
I think it's better in melee. So there's that. But I'm kind of in the same boat because we're only rating cards based on what they are now. And given the state of the economy in this game, I'm sort of in this C range. So yeah.
I am rating this a D, potentially even D minus. There are only 2 plots that you can hard cast this right now, and it only works offensively since it gives the power to an attacking character. This army doesn't have stealth, and I just think that the only time you will even consider it is in melee. And I think even then, if you're building a rush type deck out of Stark, you're going to find more efficient options than an 8 cost character that's very hard to play. I think we will almost never see it. If it does hit the table, maybe it has some swingy power effects, but I just don't think most people are going to be able to play it.
Yep, I'm right there with all you guys. I think it's just too expensive. I mean, if you factor in fealty, you could play it with the Fallen from Favor, which kind of combos well with some other stuff in Stark fealty, but it's just so expensive. And yeah, I mean, one of those 2 plots that Greg listed is Marching Orders, which is terrible, and I don't think like ever sees play. So this guy is just not good enough right now. You're not going to be able to afford him, and even when he hits the table, I mean, it's a pretty solid effect, but it's an effect that can be controlled by Neil, icon removal. I mean, he can be killed by Tears of Lys. It's just...
He's major nope. Tears bait.
Yeah. So I'm going to give him a C- right now.
On to me?
I think yeah. You're up.
All right. I get a good card. I have Catelyn Stark, which is the first of the unique characters that has been retooled. She's 7 cost loyal. Intrigue and power icon with 5 strength. She has the House Tully, Lady, and the 7 traits. Catelyn Stark gets +1 strength for each power she has. Reaction. After a Stark character you control is sacrificed or killed, Catelyn Stark gains 1 power. Limit twice per round. everybody's going to rate this card based on the core set Catelyn, which, I mean, if you're trying to compare those two, then it's not exactly a fair fight because 4 cost for 4 strength. And that passive, like, screw you effect is amazing. I think she's just a different card for a different kind of deck. And I think that if you don't remove her quickly, then she gives you headaches because she can stack up big time. I mean, all of the sacrifice tech that we're getting in this box, I think she's pretty good. I mean, 7 cost is still pretty expensive. She is loyal, so she can be reduced by fealty, which seems to be the banner of choice or the agenda of choice at the moment. So I'm gonna give her a solid. B card. So there's a downside in that she's expensive, can be a big tempo hit, And if you're running that power rush type thing, tempo's big. So I'll give her a B because she's got a little bit of a drawback, but she can be nuts.
All right. I am going to actually rate her a C, even though I understand what you're saying about not comparing her to the Corset cat. I think you have to, based on the rules of the game, and that you can only run three copies of a card with the same name. So, you know, when I'm building a deck, you know, I have to intentionally say I'm not going to use Corset cat to even begin to consider this one. Okay. And that first step of saying I'm not going to use Corset cat is such a huge leap right now in the game. And I look at this one, and if you've ever, I don't know if the rest of you feel like this, but sometimes I look at a card and I just can't get a good quick handle on how strong or weak I think it's going to be. And that's what I do when I look at her, is I simply say, I don't know. The stacking strength seems really, really cool, but at the same time, I'm not sure you're going to be triggering her twice around. As well, stacking strength seems a lot less valuable on a character without a military icon, in the sense that, you know, she's not going to help you trigger or put to the sword like a Tywin does. So right now I'm just putting her at a C, and I kind of want to rate her lower, maybe even a C minus D plus. I just think that you have to build a very specific deck around her and make sacrifices in the process.
I think you're definitely right that you have to build around her in some sense, but I don't think it's a deck that you look at and you say, wow, I don't want Corset Cat in this deck, because you're right. There are going to be almost no decks where if you could, you know, play Corset Cat, you wouldn't want to do that. But I think building a deck around her might be good enough that it would be worth not playing Corset Cat. So rather than this slotting into a deck where you've already decided that you don't want Core Cat, I think you're going to be potentially looking at a deck and saying, this cat can win me games in that deck. And I think for a rush deck, this cat might edge out Corset Cat. And again, you know, these cards aren't out yet. I haven't had a chance to play with them yet, but I mean, I can definitely see some crazy power gain potential from her. And her power gain is not an active power gain like the renown on, you know, Tywin or anybody with renown. It's just, if you're losing characters, which you almost always will be doing in games, you know, military challenges are one of the three challenges. People do them a lot. And so anytime you have to kill off a Stark character, you're going to be getting closer to your victory total. And while you're doing that, she's going to get a little bit stronger. And I think with some of the other Tully support, namely the Blackfish, I mean, if you can get her to not kneel to attack while she's got some power on her, that the game is over. So I'm going to give her a B+, because I think you have to build around her, but if you do, she can be pretty nuts.
You know, I agree, it does look like you kind of build around her, and that, I think, is kind of scaring me away from her, but maybe not for the kind of reasons we've been talking about before. Not necessarily that she competes against the other Caitlyn, because I feel like those are probably different types of decks. For instance, I think this Caitlyn maybe is a stronger choice for, say, a melee deck. That power gain is going to look pretty tempting. Being able to have that extra strength on the power challenge to push through, say, a Superior Claim or something is going to be a bit more important. But it looks like Stark is kind of getting a glut of really good stuff. Let's say a 6-cost slot, like a couple of our next cards. Roderick we got. Wait, yeah, that was Roderick, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, my brain's already shutting down. There's so many, I'm having trouble keeping them straight. but I just feel like that upper end of the cost curve is looking fairly crowded for Stark, and I'm just not sure in most decks that this Caitlyn has quite enough punch to compete with some of those other cards. So I think in the end that probably points me to I acknowledge there's some kind of sacrifice engine stuff that's probably going to be pretty decent with her, so I don't feel like I should go below.
Okay.
Greg, you're up.
All right. We have our new Eddard Stark. He is non-loyal. 6 cost, military power icon, 6 strength, lord and small council trait, renown, and the reaction. After Eddard Stark gains power using renown, choose another participating character you control. That character gains 1 power. Basically, this is the 2.0 version of Fat Bob from 1.0. Or also the CCG era, for that matter. I think he existed then. But, you know, this is our power grab character. You win a challenge with him, and he gets renown. And during the reaction, someone else gets renown. It can be used offensively. It can be used defensively. Basically, win a challenge, get 2 power on characters, 1 on him, 1 on someone else. His strength-to-cost ratio is very attractive. He's non-loyal, so he can be played in Banner to the Wolf. And, you know, I think that we are going to see him a lot in melee decks, like a lot in melee decks. And I think even Joust decks, we're going to see him quite a bit just for the cost-to-strength ratio and the idea of getting, like, Seal of the Hand on him, or, you know, some other stand effect, Illyrio or Robb Stark, and potentially doing multiple challenges with him and getting 4 power in 1 turn just with Eddard. So I'm going to rate him actually a B+ and be good.
Yeah, I am exactly there with you, Greg. B+ for basically the exact same reasons. I mean, this guy is going to grab you some mad power, I think. He makes the Stark Rush archetype really possible. And he also makes, I think he makes Banner of the Wolf a lot more attractive than it already was and will be after this box comes out. I mean, I can think of a lot of houses that have Power Rush builds that could use some extra acceleration. I think maybe like a Martell Banner of the Wolf, if you're actually trying to do the Viper stuff, having this guy to nab you some extra power could be pretty helpful.
I actually think I have to go ahead and agree as well at that B+ rating. I would love the cost to strength ratio here. The ability is great. Comparing him to the old Fat Bob, they gained an extra power himself when he gained renown. In some ways, this is a boon compared to that, because you're spreading that power around, making it harder for your opponent to eliminate one character and knock you way back. But on the other hand, I actually kind of feel like this is playing against the whole kind of sacrifice and being willing to ditch your own characters for some kind of effect theme that they've been getting. So I think you're still going to want to concentrate that power from his ability on just 1 or 2 other characters to try to make sure you can, you know, still have a lot of other save options to ditch. But regardless, I think you're good.
Funny you should mention those 1 or 2 other characters, because they're bookended right next to him in the pack. Look at Cat and look at Blackfish. Yeah, this guy's awesome. I mean, just the sheer efficiency with renown is incredible. Patrick already talked about the non-loyal. I don't know that he goes in every single deck, so I can't quite push him into the A range, so I'm going to have to, unfortunately, agree with everybody. B+.
Alrighty. Next card we got is the Blackfish. He is...
You're welcome.
Thanks, Will. He is a unique character. He is loyal. He has 4 strength and a military and power icon. His traits are House Tully, Knight, and Lord. What traits? Can I just say right away, those are some great traits. He has renown, and while the Blackfish has 4 or more power, each House Tully character you control does not kneel when declared as an attacker. And he also has the reaction, after you win a military challenge as the attacking player, draw 1 card, limit once per phase. This card is just awesome. I mean, either one of his be pretty great by itself, and the fact that he has both just makes him pretty insane. I think the first edition version, it didn't used to have to be as the attacker for the military challenge draw. Am I remembering that correctly?
It did.
It did have to be as the attacker?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an exact reprint, except for 4 power instead of 3.
Shows how much I remember of first edition. But either way, that's pretty good, because Stark wins military challenges as the attacker quite often. So just drawing a card every turn is pretty stellar, and he doesn't even have to be in the challenge to draw that card, which is great. And if you get four power on him, I mean, even if it was just he doesn't kneel to attack, having a renowned character that doesn't kneel to attack is so incredibly good. Like, it just accelerates your victory so much. I mean, like I said earlier, having Catelyn, if she has a couple of power, not kneeling to attack, you will just win whatever challenge you want. And he's got the Knight trait, which is just generally very good for him. There's a lot of synergy with Knights, especially with Tyrell. I mean, if you play Lady Sansa's Rose on him, he is like completely activated off of one challenge, which is incredible. The fact that the Tumblestone Knights are both House Tully and Knight, if you get him and a couple of those guys out, and then you flip that Knight plot to give them renown, that game's pretty much over. And not to mention the fact that if you're afraid of events on him, playing that Knight plot to make him immune to events, that's enough in and of itself probably to run that plot. So he's got to be an A for me. I almost want to give him an A+. In fact, I am. I'm going to be bold, and I'm going to give him an A+. Ooh. I think he is the best card, the best Stark card in this pack, and I think he is at least a 2 of in every single Stark deck right now.
Wow.
Will?
I'm reeling from you there. Yeah, I'm still kind of trying to wrap my mind. I mean, the Blackfish is good, but it looks like between, you know, these three characters we had in a row, plus what Stark already had, they're really shaping up to be the, you know, like, renown and power-grabbing house this time around, which feels really different. I'm not quite sure what to think about that from a thematic level, unless they just get a lot of this in the first block and then have all these cards banned from the game next block. That's about the best Nedley connection I can think of. So I don't know. It looks really good. Lots of power grab, card draw, still quite good even with the reserve value. He's vulnerable to Tears of Lys, and despite, say, Patrick's love of the Knight plot, gold doesn't make me super confident in it still. So I don't know. This Blackfish is probably more of a plus to me.
I agree with almost everything Patrick says. I can't pick apart really much in that argument. I'm not really too concerned about running tourney at the King. But this is a bomb card. I think he's an A. Four strength still makes him vulnerable to burn. And he is vulnerable to tears, but I mean, with all of the different stuff that Stark's getting for cancel and save and all that stuff, I'm okay with it. I think he's awesome, and he's loyal, which is a huge distinction, because it feels he's going to be the primary agenda until, you know, the foreseeable future. Then he's relatively affordable. I'm down. He's an A.
I'm a little lower than you guys, but before I get to my grade, I want to point out two things just to make a distinction. Both his passive ability and his reaction do not require him to be involved. If you look at it, you know, while he has four more power, each House Tully character you control does not kneel. So even if your opponent, like, Melisandre's him down to a kneeling position, if you have other House Tullys, and he and Blackfish already has his four power, they don't kneel. Likewise, someone might say, well, why don't you just give him insight instead of his reaction? Well, the way the reaction's worded, he doesn't have to win the military in order to draw the card. Just you do. Okay. So I think that those are pretty important distinctions that actually make each of his abilities a little bit better than they would be in similar circumstances on another character. I do keep coming back to that four strength when I look at him, though. As well, you know, even though some situations were mentioned about how he can get that four power quickly, those are very specific situations. And in most games, it's going to take a little while. You know, if you're not playing Banner to the Rose, okay, then you're basically relying on, like, the River Run Minstrel, which we'll get to shortly, or Eddard in order to give him that power. And now you're talking about some hefty combo pieces. And so I think that four power, you know, outside of that quick hit Banner to the Rose is just not going to come easy. And then that 6-for-4 is not going to feel so efficient to people. And I'm going to put him at an A-, but I'm not sure I consider him an auto-include. Maybe I say one copy of him. Unless I build a House Tully deck, then of course I'm running through. Okay, so in a House Tully deck, I will agree. He is going to be an A-plus in that deck. But if it's not centered around House Tully, I'm even questioning my A-, and maybe put him at B-plus. And I think that you have to ask yourself that question of, you know, if it's a card that is such a benefit in a traded deck, then if you're not playing that traded deck, you know, does he deserve the A rating? So that's my question.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if I can do a quick little thing, I think that the reason why I think he's an A in all decks is more because of his draw than because of the 4-power thing.
And he has renown.
And also that is good. So back to Will for the next card.
All right. This is Jon Snow, not loyal to House Stark, go figure. 5 cost, 4 strength, just a military icon. He has the bastard trait and action. Sacrifice the Stark character to choose and stand a unique Stark character. Limit once per round. This is the kind of open-ended sacrifice engine that I've been looking for in a Stark. I'm very excited to see Jon and the flexibility that he gives us here. It's just fairly strong right now, I think, getting some extra use out of characters like Eddard, I really love the thought of using him with Caitlyn to stand her, give her a power and strength boost mid-challenge, which is a little hilarious to have the two of them work for Nedley's. They hate each other. But I like him. I don't think his full potential is seen yet. He's bound to only grow as the pool grows. He's probably with just the one icon and no other keywords or abilities himself, he's probably like a B-, but I think he'll grow.
I'm slightly higher. I think he's a B-plus card. I know that he's a single icon, but just that stand can't be understated. And then if you've got Rob on the table, let's go ahead and stand the whole board. I don't know. I think that he's really sick. I hate that stat line, but I think he can be really awesome. I'm a B-plus.
I lost track there. I'm putting him at a C-plus. I don't disagree that the stand is pretty awesome, but I don't know how often you really have chuds that you can keep tossing. You know, you've got to keep dudes around for claim soak and you know, between Wildfire and First Snow and all that, and Varys. You know, I'm just questioning, you know, if you pull him in a late game where boards have been whittled down and hands are whittled down and, you know, his ability is for all practical purposes blank because you have no one to sacrifice, you know, you're going to regret having him. You're going to say, ugh, I'm paying 5 for a 4-cost military guy. I guess maybe regret isn't the right word, but, you know, maybe there's someone else you want better. And so I just think that for the most part, I'm going to look at him. He's going to look interesting. And the Shaga part of me, as Will said, is going to say, ooh, you know, what cool combo can I come up with? But the Jamie part of me is always going to say, cut him from the deck.
Yeah, I think time is going to tell with this guy because I'm pretty conflicted too for the same reasons that you are, Greg. Part of me is like, well, if you have Rob out, that text box reads sacrifice a star character to stand all characters you control, which is pretty good. But that is an 11 gold combo that you won't necessarily always have. So, and I've also definitely noticed that in the post First Snow meta, boards are sometimes smaller, especially in the closer games. You know, boards might only be 3 or 4 characters. If you're both playing resets, or even if just your opponent is playing First Snow or Wildfire or Varus or what have you, your board might be pretty small, especially if the game is really getting down to the wire. And yeah, sometimes we'll be able to play out a Winterfell Steward with him and sack it to stand somebody. And I can definitely see, like, you know, worst case end of the game scenario, just even sacrificing himself to stand like Eddard to get you those 2 power you need to win could push you over the edge. But there could definitely be times where he is kind of sitting there and you can't really trigger him because you just don't have the bodies to handle it. So I think he's going to be a B minus for me, because I still think he's good. And, you know, if you're in a position where it's a close game, but you have a little bit of an edge and you have some bodies on the board, he can really help you turn that, you know, small margin that you're ahead into a mile and close the game out for you.
Hey, Will, do you mind if I say something real quick?
Go for it.
I just want to say, like, Jon Snow is evergreen. Like, he's in a deluxe box. So as we get just more crap to throw in decks, then he becomes super invaluable. I think he's awesome. Go ahead.
All right.
I think it's you, Luke. You're in the next card.
Oh, Will started this game.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, shoot. All right. Well, I get a super sneaky card. I get an interesting card. Something that I think a much better deck builder than me can take advantage of. I get the Wolves of the North. It's a 5-cost character, loyal, 3 strength with a military icon with a direwolf trait. No attachments and stealth keywords. Reaction. After Wolves of the North bypasses a character using stealth, that character gets minus X strength until the end of the phase. X is the number of direwolf cards you control. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack with that text box. Stealth on a military icon is always welcome, especially in Stark. That minus X strength goes till the end of the phase, and that X is not direwolf characters, it's direwolf cards. So if you're throwing down a Lady or a Nymeria or something, it could be really powerful. And how many times in this game have you been calculating strength 7, 8, 9 times in your head, knowing that if they swing at you on the ensuing challenge, that they're going to have exactly 5 strength? That can be super sneaky. 5 for 3 is not super efficient. It is loyal, so there's that. But I don't know. Like I said, I think that it can be good. I don't know how I'm going to slot this into a deck because I'm just not that savvy of a deck builder. I'm more of a, I got to play this and tinker with it and see what works. So I'm going to give it a sneaky B minus because I really think that this card can be interesting. And the Direwolf trait seems to be a trait that's getting pushed big time. So I hope that that continues. I'll kick it over to Greg, who I think likes this card a lot.
I do like this card. When I saw the full Stark box list, this was the card that jumped out to me. This is the one that was sort of like, be still my beating heart card. And one of the reasons why is I love it because it appeals to both the Jaime player and the Shaga player. You know, from a Shaga standpoint, you quickly see the combo with Greywing and the ability with a couple other direwolves to begin knocking off very large characters on the board and being able to do it turn after turn after turn. The Jaime part of me says even without that scenario, even without the combo pieces, it's still a solid card, you know, that, you know, is going to help me win military challenges as well as rendering some of their characters much less useful. You know, imagine stealthing by a Balin and lowering his strength. And even if this guy is the only direwolf on the board and you lower Balin's strength from 5 to 4, you know, that's a big threshold change in the game. And I think that, you know, people are going to find as they play him that even that -1 is going to change, you know, game states for some of the more important challenge triggers. I admit that in a direwolf dedicated deck, he is much, much better than a not one. In a direwolf dedicated deck, he's my MVP. And I have already played multiple games with a direwolf deck with him in there. Keep in mind, he's non-unique. So, you know, we have all of the unique direwolves that can fit in a deck, plus we have the non-unique direwolf pups and this guy. So it's not hard to get 4 or 5 direwolves on the board, and he does change things. But in a non-direwolf deck, I have to be honest and say, you know, he's going to compete with the Sirio spot. He's going to, you know, compete with some other 5-cost cards you want to fit. So, you know, if he's A+ in a direwolf dedicated deck and he's maybe a C+ otherwise, then, you know, I'm going to split the difference and say he's a B+ card for me.
That was basically everything I had about this card, Greg. I think it averages out to me to more of a B- just because in those normal decks that are not super direwolf themed, I think the 5 cost slot is just has so much competition in Stark. And now that we have 3 stellar 6 cost cards in Stark as well, it's going to be pretty tight to get him in those regular decks. But I think he is the piece that direwolf decks needed to like be possible, because direwolf decks are super good at doing military challenges and kind of okay at doing other challenges if you've got the Kennel Master and you can kind of kneel him around and block stuff. But this guy, I mean, for me, other than the obvious use of, you know, making Tywin 0 strength and then eating him with Greywind, that's a pretty cool combo. But just in normal play, if you can lower Cersei's strength to 0 in a direwolf deck, you don't have to worry about that 2-claim intrigue coming back at you, and that can be huge for that kind of deck. And thank so I God think just that, yeah, thank Christ that it is loyal, because a Targ Banner of the Wolf would be every single Targ deck in the entire meta, because that would just be so stupid.
A dragon wolf deck.
Stupid, yeah. And I mean, you know, I think that is part of the reason why Time for Wolves got a little change, and we'll talk about that later when we get to it, I'm sure. But I think he is a very good card, and in a direwolf deck, he is the absolute centerpiece and is going to be awesome there. But in a not direwolf deck, he's probably not going to make the cut. So B minus for me overall.
Let me point something out real quick. He actually does not work very well with the Kennel Master. Just, I mean, everything else does, but he has to be thrown in initially for the stealth. So just something to note.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, gosh, I'm not really sure what more there is to say about it at this point. I think this is a nice tool for Direwolf. I like it. I'm not sure how often you're going to be burning Tywin, as other hosts say, because you need a lot of Direwolves to pull that off.
And it the whole army, right? The whole thing is Shaga, really?
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't say it was an article about it. But
oh, okay.
those are not meant to be practical.
Pardon me, it's not called All Things Shaga no more. It's Qyburn's Dungeon.
Yeah, or Laboratory.
Right, Laboratory, right.
But I will say the thing that we'll hear, even in the dedicated direwolf deck, is that all of these wolves are all military all the time. And it does worry me a little bit that, well, you can kind of use it to kind of mitigate some incoming challenges, like Patrick was talking about. It worries me that you're going to be very all in on military, which Stark already does well. And I think you're going to be losing some punch to actually push through other challenges. So I think overall that leaves me probably at a B for Wolves of the North.
I would just like to say real quick that I just thought of an incredibly janky deck that is Stark Banner of the Sun and just plays 3 Attainted, 3 Condemned, and then is a wolf deck. So you just throw out the icon attachments to stop all of the other challenges, and then just go nuts on military.
No Nymeria? You didn't mention her?
Oh yeah, she'd be in there for sure as well.
Well, and keep in mind that direwolves have like warm rain. So even if you're losing that intrigue, you're spot killing dudes. So, you know, you are right.
I'm just thinking about offense.
Yeah.
That is like the surprise event of the century.
There is always that moment when you're playing Stark and you only have one card left in your hand and a gold left. And they're like, man, this intrigue challenge could go very poorly, very quickly.
Shoot, we took a lot of time on Wolves of the North.
Yeah, so I think Greg's up with Arya then?
Yep, all right, Arya. Yep. Non-loyal, 4 cost, intrigue power, 3 strength, lady trait, reaction after a Stark character you control is killed. Sacrifice Arya Stark to choose and kill a character with strength 3 or lower. I am never going to complain about spot kill. Her response to trigger does require a little extra. It has to be a Stark character that's killed, so she's not going to trigger off any of the self-sacrifice stuff. Her stats are okay. They're not great. My biggest problem is I really like the core set Arya. So, you know, that's going to be the biggest hurdle for me to overcome is, can I pull the other one out to put this one in? So right now, I'm just going to rate her a B, mostly for the possibility of spot kill. But I could possibly be changing my mind 6 months from now.
I think for me as well, taking out Corset Aria is a steep price to pay. I really like the fact that she's four costs because surviving first snow is a big deal right now, and she certainly helps with that. Sacking her is a pretty big cost, though. Four gold for an investment that you're going to potentially discard to kill something that maybe costs four for your opponent, I guess, depending on the card. You can hit some pretty good stuff with this. Yeah, Theon, Marjorie, Rhaegal, plenty of good cards to hit with her. So I think she's reasonable.
Yeah, a character whose strength has been lowered with Wolves of the North.
Yep, that'll do it. And because of that, and also just because of the fact that she has an intrigue icon, I think if you're building a Direwolf deck, she might be something to strongly consider there. Because, you know, having intrigue icons to be able to use those Kennel Masters to dump Direwolves in is, I think, really important for that deck. So I think I'm going to give her a B minus, just because Corset Aria is so good. But she is really good in certain decks, this one is. And I really like that green icon, so yeah.
Yeah, I've got to say I really like the intrigue icon as well. This one, I admit, kind of worries me as far as the sacrifice of being Ghost for Stark. I am actually starting to get a little worried about their ability to keep stuff on the table. At this point, you know, if you're triggering her ability, you're down two characters, X amount of gold to their one character that is probably three or four gold, since she's not killing anything particularly beefy on their side. So, I mean, I still think it's a reasonable cool ability. I like the kill, but I think she's definitely going to be overshadowed by her Corset counterpart, because some of the other sacrifice options don't require you to be in a spot where you're down two characters for one effect. So I think I probably just give her like a C plus.
So I think this is a bad card. Like, I think this is an actively bad card. Like, if you're losing claim to military, or somebody gets off a kill event or something, something's already died, and then you gotta sack her. And of course, sacrifice can't be saved unless you have the whole needle and everything. And, like, she's non-loyal. She can't be reduced with the fealty. Four costs sometimes can be an awkward cost slot. She doesn't have the right icons if I'm trying to push my board state. And, like, other than Marjorie and Rhaegal, and, you know, I mean, there's a couple good targets for it, and then the super janky Wolves of the North thing, you're at card disadvantage every time you use her. And if you got to be able to spend four of her again to be able to potentially trigger it again, I don't know. I think she's a bad card. I think that, like, she could see play in certain builds that are focused on the Direwolves and they need the green icon, but I don't know. I think she's a C minus at best, so I'm going to go with that.
All right, so here's one real quick question. If your opponent has Marjorie on the board and you have Crown of Gold in hand, how highly are you considering putting that Crown of Gold on Marjorie?
I'm highly considering it, but I'm also probably not bannering to the Wolf to get Aria in my deck.
No, I'm not saying necessarily specific to Stark, but I'm using the Crown of Gold as the parallel card. Basically, that's what Aria is doing, is she's knocking out three cost characters. So
yeah,
you're not intentionally.
It doesn't matter. If she's got a dupe or a bodyguard, then it doesn't matter. Like, Crown of Gold at least eats through all that.
Yeah, sure it does.
Like, Crown of Gold is disproportionately better than Arya Stark, not only because the strength threshold is higher, but because it eats through dupes. Like, Arya's bad. I'm sorry. Like, Arya's bad.
And you didn't care.
Well, I mean, you're
Arya's
well,
bad. This
we're losing characters
exactly
all the
like,
time.
This sounds exactly like something to save for the end of the show.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yep. All right, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's me. Next card, right? Or has everybody gone on Aria?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. Next card, we have Jory Cassell. He is a 4-cost, 3-strength, military power character. He is non-loyal. He has the guard trait and the interrupt. When a unique Stark character you control would be killed, sacrifice Jory to save it. Then, if there is a winter plot card revealed, that character gains 1 power. I really like this guy. You know, when we were talking about the Blackfish, we brought up Tears and such, and same with Eddard, and, you know, Tears is a pretty recurring problem that Stark has, because a lot of their big characters don't have intrigue icons. And now, with him and with Kat, Corset Kat, and Winterfell, Stark now has three ways to mitigate Tears. And I think that is... And also, no, not that. That does not work at all. And the pack survives. That's another one. So they are quickly stacking up their methods of avoiding Tears. And this guy, in general, is just great. Like, he's a solid body. He survives First Snow. Gaining power on the character, if there's a winter plot revealed, doesn't even have to be your winter plot. They're probably going to be pretty common for a little while here. Power is always good. And I think my favorite use of him is that if your opponent is coming at you with two claim, and you choose Jory and whoever and some other Stark character, and then sacrifice Jory to save the other Stark character, you just turn two claim into one sacrifice. And potentially gave yourself a power.
Wait,
which
is that trick still work in second edition?
It does still work in second edition. And in fact, I don't think it would work in first edition, but it does work here for the same reason that, like, you can save Bran from being put to the sword with himself. Because of the way that the interrupt window works, you can sacrifice him from play before he's killed. So that is a huge, huge tempo shift from going to potentially having to kill two people to having to discard one. So I like him a lot. He is a B+ for me.
I just want to know who let Daryl from The Walking Dead into Game of Thrones. Like, look at that art. That is who it is. But as far as the card goes, no, I love these kind of on-the-board saves and the kind of mental grinder it puts your opponent in as they try to decide, like, what targeted kill effect they want to just waste, knowing that if they try to use it on your editor, whatever they actually want to remove, they just can't, because you stop that with Jory. Unless, of course, they're Lannister and they just treachery. But I think that's a great ability. He's in a solid cost point, like you said. So, yeah, I think I give him a B myself.
I'm right with Patrick, B+. This is the first in-house save that we have other than Greyjoy. And I love saves, so yes.
I think for me, I'm a little lower than you guys. Even though the game very much revolves around keeping your power characters alive, 4 cost is a pretty hefty cost when for 1 cost, I can probably do the same thing with a bodyguard. So I guess if I'm looking at playing Jory, I'm probably already playing bodyguards, and I'm saying I am just doubling down on making sure my power characters don't die. But if someone's paying 2 for put to the sword, and I'm, you know, sacrificing Jory to prevent that put to the sword, that's gold disadvantage. You know, it's my 4 for their 2. So hopefully, you know, if I'm playing Jory, I've at least got some use out of him during the challenge phase before then. But I don't think that that's anything to sneeze at. For me, if the option is bodyguard or Jory, I'm going to always choose bodyguard. So I think I have him a little bit lower. Now, this whole issue of him turning 2 claim into 1 claim, that's news to me. I had not read anything about that, and I guess that's because his interrupt happens after claim? You know, after the claim step of choosing which characters are going to die or something along those lines. So that is an interesting little nugget about him that I don't think should be overlooked. So I'm going to say C, mostly on the strength of that possibility that he turns 2 claim into 1. Otherwise, I'd rather just put a body.
And I would just like to say right now, if I'm wrong about that, blame Alex Hines, because he put that seed in my mind on the rules forum of Card Game DB. So, yeah.
You are not wrong, because the steps go compare strength, then gain challenges bonus, and then apply claim result. And there's an interrupt window between those two steps. So yep. It's yeah. A real thing. It's like the Dune long shipment from the CCG.
Yeah. The River Run Minstrel?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this time we have another 4-cost Stark. This one is non-unique and non-loyal. She has 3 strength, intrigue and power icons, the House Tully, and minstrel traits. I really hope that matters. Reaction. After Riverrun Minstrel enters play, choose a House Tully character. That character gains power. Reminiscent of the very first Eddard Stark that we saw in Westeros edition of the CCG, gained a power when it came into play. I think this is interesting and fine. Not a whole lot of punch to it, but a fairly important cost slot to get that all-important intrigue icon into Stark, and gives you an extra little boost with a few different things. And a great way to close out a melee game in the marshalling phase, if you just barely stall out short. So, I mean, I like her, but she's not knocking down any walls. She's probably just a solid C.
Yeah, I mean, she's an average card. She's a C for me. Positive trait, good icons, non-unique, so there's that, I guess. She's non-loyal, which is okay, I guess. Can be hard to pay for, but in certain decks, you definitely include her. So, average card for me. See.
I think I have him. It is a her, right? Yeah. I think I'm at a C as well. Obviously, in a House Tully deck, you're playing it. If it's not a House Tully deck, I'm going to struggle playing with it. I know the rave of the community now, 4-cost is so awesome because of First Snow, but I'm sorry, I have to feel like...
We all know how you feel about First Snow, Greg.
Yeah, it's got to do a little more for me. So House Tully deck, obviously she's going in. Everything else, I'm highly considering not putting her in. So I'm going to say C.
I like her a lot. Again, obviously in House Tully decks, but even in not House Tully decks, just, you know, gaining a power can be pretty good. And she has that icon that Stark really wants still. And, you know, Greg can spout his First Snow beliefs all day long. We all know how he feels about First Snow, but I am still of the opinion that it is a very impactful card, and that there are a lot of decks that I've, you know, heard people talking about. My deck just gets ruined by First Snow. And if that's the case, if it's already a Stark deck, well, lovely. You have a lot of new cards. If it's not, I think bannering Stark for some of these 4-cost characters is going to be a really effective option. And it should not be understated that you can just win if you get to 14 power. If you're that one power shy and you get to your marshalling, you can just win the game off of this card. And that is always pretty good. And, you know, if you feel like playing heads on spikes as well to try to win the game, you can now win from 12 power, which is a little janky, but...
I got hit with 2 heads on spikes at this past weekend's regional. That plot is ridiculous.
If you're playing heads on spikes, give her a look-see. So I'm going to go with the C+, because I like her. I think she's an include in a lot of my Stark decks right now. So,
is it my turn?
I think so.
Yes.
Okay, I get old Nan. Thank God she's not the same as she was in first edition. She's a 3-cost unique character, non-loyal, with an intrigue icon and 2 strength. She has the most amazing trait that's going to be super important throughout the rest of the game, which is Storyteller. And she has the action Interrupt. When a plot card is revealed, kneel old Nan to have that plot card gain the summer or winter trait until the end of the round. Unfortunately, I have to rate her based on what she is right now, and I think she's something. Like, she's a card. I'm just not that good of a deck builder, and so, like, I think that in the hands of a capable deck builder, I think that, like, the summer and winter plots can be good, and the winter plus can be particularly nasty. Even right now, not even with more stuff coming out, like right now, they can be nasty. And she can make that even worse for your opponent. I just don't see her making a lot of decks. Like, she's going to get cut a lot, even with an intrigue icon. She's 3-cost for 2 strength, no other icons. I don't know. I don't even know what to rate her. I guess right now, I'm giving her a straight D right now.
We have had the summer and winter agendas spoiled that are coming in the next chapter pack cycle, but that's still several months off, and we don't know what other summer and winter related cards are going to be in those packs. So it is really hard to rate her, knowing stuff is coming soon. But right now, the number of cards in the game that require summer or winter are so very, very few. Summer or winter on the plot, that is. So I look at her and I'm like, you know what? Maybe in like 6 months, she is this autoplay out of Stark, because summer and winter themed plot decks are dominating the scene and you have to have her to manipulate that. But right now, yeah, she's at best, I think she's a D. You know, you could probably even put her as an F right now and be satisfied with that, knowing there's this caveat that in 6 months, when the new chapter pack cycle is halfway through, that we're changing our mind, you know. But yeah, right now she's a D, if not an F.
I agree that, you know, in once we get partway through the next cycle, I think we're going to get a lot more summer and winter effects, probably. I mean, given the fact that we're having the agendas already, I think that is definitely telling that the next cycle is going to be all about summer, winter, and kings. So I think she's going to go up in value a lot, but I think you're underestimating her a little bit right now. I think there aren't that many cards that key off of summer and winter. I think there are two really big ones. The first one is Winterfell, which we'll talk about later in this very review. And the other one is Fish Whiskers, which we'll talk about tomorrow and, or next week, I mean, and, not tomorrow. If you're not, that is a card that, like, if you're not prepared for Fish Whiskers, like, if you're not Bera, if you don't have Neil, or if you don't have Winter Plots, you can just lose the game immediately. Because he will pull off the Seastone Chair, and there is nothing you can say about it. He'll snag unopposed power, he'll trigger all of that Greyjoy crap that they love to do on unopposed challenges, and being able to mitigate that is big. And we'll talk about it more when we get to Winterfell, but I think that's another card that is really quite impactful, and being able to give yourself winter traded plots for that can be pretty good. So, but I agree, she's not stellar right now. I think about a C-, D-plus for me right now.
D-plus isn't a grade.
What?
D-plus doesn't count. Is that really a grade?
Why would that not be a grade?
I don't know. I just, like, if you get a D-plus, did you really pass?
She passes. I'll give her a C-. She passed the class. She fell asleep a lot. She skipped a couple of quizzes, but she eats it out.
She just wrote in her notebook the whole time while you were teaching.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I think that there are a couple Stark decks already that I'm definitely playing one copy of her in, and because of that, she's going to get a C- for me, and bonus points to the fact that she fuels all of my nightmares. So is terrifying art.
That yes. is terrifying art.
Yes, she is.
She looks like she's like, already a white.
Yeah, like no wonder Bran is like a like messed up kid. Like if you had to look at that every night before you went to sleep.
Well, I don't think I have a whole lot more to add to the Nan stuff. I think the jury is sort of still out for me until we have a lot more summer and winter stuff. I just don't think there's the support there right now to justify what's a lackluster body and stats. So she's a D.
All right, on to Osha. I think it's me. A non-loyal Stark character. 3 cost, military intrigue icons. 2 strength, wildling trait, challenges icon. Remove Osha from the challenge, then stand her limit once per phase. She's an A. I can't imagine running a Stark deck or Banner to Stark and not using one copy of her. That ability is very similar to the LCG 1.0 version, and you always ran it in 1.0. It has a slightly higher cost now. So I don't mind the higher cost. That's fine. 3 for 2. I will always run one. It is a challenge, a very important challenge-based effect that mucks with challenge math.
I think she's good. I don't think she's anywhere near as good as she was in 1.0, though. I mean, 2 strength is just not what it used to be. And she's still good. That challenge effect is still very good. Still messes with math, makes them oppose challenges they otherwise might not. But that three slot can be pretty tight sometimes. And again, you know, Greg doesn't think First Nova Winter is very impactful, but her being bounced by First Nova Winter, three is a rough cost slot, I think, right now. And, you know, I definitely have Stark decks where I play one of her, but I also have a Stark deck or two where I couldn't fit her. And, you know, it broke my heart a little bit because she was so awesome in 1.0. But that inefficiency of cost to strength kind of hurts her a bit in my mind. So I'm going to give her a B.
I think she's actually really solid still. And I actually think kind of the expanded curve and strength is a bit more of a boon for her. I feel like if your opponent wants to defend against that challenge, they're probably putting a little more resources into it than you did, or they are letting you win it, or at least more than they would have had to in first edition in similar situations. So I dig her. I'm probably with Greg. Just a one of, but pretty solid for that. And so in that case, I'm probably going to give her a B.
I think this is an A card. Like, I don't know how you, like, what, like, how do you not find space for her? Like, she's amazing with the intrigue and the military icons. Like, being able to potentially use her twice, like, sure, yeah, First Snow's going to bounce her, but, you know, we're seeing that Stark is becoming a little more resilient to that plot. I don't know that I'm going to necessarily dupe her to save her, but at the same time, I'm never sad to see Osha in my hand. Yeah, she's awesome. I'm down. She's an A.
All right. On to the next card, then. Yes, so indeed. Next up, we have a Bear Island Loyalist. Surprisingly, he is loyal. He is a 3-cost, 2-strength character with a military and a power icon. He has the House Mormont trait, and while Bear Island Loyalist is participating in a challenge, each other participating Stark character you control gains immune to opponent's events. Holy conditions, Batman. That is a lot of things that have to be happening at once for him to do stuff. He's got to be participating. The guy you want to protect has got to be participating. The guy you want to protect has to be a Stark character, and it has to be an event that is going to trigger during this challenge that they're participating. He is certainly Dracarys proofing, which is always fine, but he is very bad at protecting against anything else. If you're still getting put to the sword while you have him and whoever you want to protect in the challenge, you are in a serious pickle, and you're probably losing that game already. Because you're Stark, you should not be getting put to the sword while you have multiple strong characters in a military challenge. And just use Winterfell if you're afraid of that. He doesn't protect against tears, which is Stark's biggest disadvantage. He is a bad card, and you should not play him. He is going to get an F for me.
Yeah, I think you're totally right that there are just a million different restrictions on that, and I think that makes it really, really terrible to try and get up against. Some decks may give him a try, but he's probably...
This guy sucks. He's an F. And I'm really I'm hesitant to give Fs because the last two Fs I've given, I've like amended to like not be totally F cards, but I think this guy blows.
So when I look at this guy and I look at the fact he's loyal, it makes me think that the playtesters basically said, if he's going to have loyalist in his name, he's got to be loyal. You know, that sort of thing. Because every other card in the game that only affects cards from that faction, I mean, maybe there's a few examples otherwise, but for the most part, they are not loyal. You know, think of a card like, you know, Things I Do for Love that requires a Lannister lord or lady, you know, or even Out of Stark itself. The draw location, which is the only draw card in the game right now that's not loyal. But
or the North is not loyal.
Correct.
Yeah, but that's not really draw.
Yeah, but the location requires that you have a Stark card. So I look at him and I'm like, from a game balance standpoint, he absolutely doesn't need to be loyal. And I think from precedence, he doesn't need to be loyal. But it just strikes me as one of those things that people get, you know, on their high horse. If you're going to name him loyalist, he's got to be loyal, even though that the Targ loyalist, the Deadly reducer guy, is not loyal. But sorry, that was too long just to rate a card. An F plus. So
now that is.
I don't.
He took one test and he did okay.
No, he didn't even do okay. He still failed.
No, but he didn't even show up for the rest of the tests.
Oh, man. Okay.
Back to me for a card I really like, then.
Oh, man. You get, like, one of the best cards in the whole damn box.
Here we go. Sansa Stark. She's loyal. She's 2 cost, 4 strength. Yeah, you heard that, folks. An intrigue and a power icon. The lady trait, and Sansa Stark gets -1 strength for each Stark character in your dead pile. And while Sansa Stark's strength is 0, she gains inside. I, number one, want to say,
don't steal my thunder for deadliness. I'm going to write a whole article about this.
Okay, that wasn't going to be number one. Number one was going to be that I love seeing this art back. I love this Sansa art. Number two was going to be Nedliness. I'll let you really detail that in the article. But I just, you know, anytime you've got a card at this cost to strength ratio in second edition, my ears perk up. A couple icons they really want to have. And the other Sansa, well, solid. I don't think he's putting up a huge fight against this one. I love her. I think she's an A.
This card is just stupid good. I mean, like, what more do you want with a loyal, unique 2 for 4? Obviously, the Nedliness, everybody's going to talk about ad nauseum, but I still want to write my article, so I'm not going to belabor it to death. I don't like the art that much, but that's just me. I don't know. She's just so good. Like, she's good early game, mid game, late game, whatever you want. Like, I don't know how you don't run her. The other Sansa does have her advantages, but that card is literally the only card that's going to replace her. So she's an A for me. She's awesome.
I think she does replace the Corset Sansa in almost every deck except for a rush deck where you're looking for power out of low cost characters. Yep, and I mean, you're going to love this new Sansa on setup, and late in the game when you need a little bit of card draw, you're going to love her too, even though she's not adding strength to the challenge. And, you know, I think you're probably only playing one though. But still, I think she's going to be a one of in almost every single Stark deck
forever.
Yeah.
So I'm rating her an A minus.
I really like her a lot. Again, she's great early game. She kind of falls a little flat mid game if she's going to kind of be at like 1 or 2 strength. But that is, I think, like, Stark has a lot of strength the mid game. If they can get going strong, they can kind of really start to get that board advantage going towards the mid game. And so it's okay that she kind of wanes a little bit towards the mid game and then picks it back up for the end. Obviously, it sucks that she is just kind of trash against Targ. Like, they'll flip that plot and she's gone, which is gonna suck. And also, you know, as soon as you have 2 dead Starks, which happens pretty often against Targ, Plaza's gonna start to hit her. But even so, she's an amazing card. Definitely a one of in every Stark deck that's not a rush deck and running the old one. So I'm gonna give her a solid A, full A for me.
On to me.
Mm-hmm.
I get another wolf. I get Shaggy Dog. He is a 2-cost Stark non-loyal. Obviously unique, because there's only one Shaggy Dog. Military icon with 3 strength with the Direwolf trait. No attachment. While you control Rickon Stark, he gets +2 strength and gains a military icon. I love that this is so reminiscent of the old CCG days when the wolves always buffed the kids. And the 2 for 3 is always nice. Like, I don't know why I wouldn't stick him a one of, you know? I mean, if we're running a Direwolf centered deck, then he's pretty killer by comparison to the Direwolf pup at the same cost slot. I think that this card is a solid B just because it's not amazing or game breaking, but it's definitely something you want to include. Go ahead, Greg.
Yep. You know, one of my concerns with this card, and you know, I'm fine with the card as it is it makes the Direwolf pup look really crappy. Okay, you know, it's the same cost, but this one right out of the gate is 3 strength, and a Direwolf pup which gets +1 for each other Direwolf. Like, you have to have 3 other Direwolves for the Direwolf pup to have a higher strength than that. And I mean, yes, in a Direwolf dedicated deck there's gonna be times you get 4 and 5 out, but I just, I, you know, I really like him. If the option is three Direwolf pups or two and Shaggy Dog, you're always choosing two and Shaggy Dog, you know? And then, of course, it gives, you know, Rickon the bonus, and we'll get to Rickon, but he seems like a one of in most Stark decks as well. So, you know, I'm giving him probably a B. Yeah, just a B.
God, I miss first edition Shaggy Dog so much.
Yeah, this guy, just a really efficient body for Stark. I mean, he's a braided warrior that has text and a better trait. So he's solid. And I think if you were playing Direwolf pups, but you weren't playing a Direwolf deck, definitely drop one for him. And if you are playing a Direwolf deck, definitely add one of him anyway. So he's a B for me as well.
I have to say I like Shaggy Dog. I put him in much the same boat as the Hatchlings right now. Efficient, even if I'm not doing the whole theme deck, I probably want one because it's really efficient for the cost and stats, and he's not loyal. And much like I hopefully remember I rated them, that's probably worth a B.
Yeah. All right, Greg, is this one over to you?
I think so. House Tully Septon, non-loyal, 2-cost, power icon, 2-strength, with the ally House Tully and the 7 trait, and the marshalling action of discard 1 power from a character you control to reduce the cost of the next House Tully or the 7 character you marshal this phase by 2, limit once per phase. Obviously, you're just not even going to use this card in a deck that doesn't have enough House Tullys to make this work. However, in a House Tully deck, oh my goodness, we are in a gold-intensive environment still, and the idea of lowering, you know, we talked about how great the Blackfish was. If all of a sudden the Blackfish is now 4 for me instead of 6, and yes, I had to ditch, you know, power from one of my characters, but he's basically becomes a walking King's Road, because King's Road is 1 for 3, so it's a 2 reduction, and he's going to give you 2 reduction at the cost of a power. This is very, very strong, but at the same time, he is very, very narrow in focus. So it's hard to rate him. I think in a Tully deck, he's going to be exceptionally strong to get your board plenished with big characters fast, but you won't play him in anything else. So I'm just going to call him a C for lack of clarity.
Yep. I think judging by the fact that River Run is one of the cards that we've seen the name of in the second cycle, I'm hoping that they're going to continue to develop the Tully theme for Stark. And if that's the case, then we can really get a whole, like, Tully deck going. I think this guy could be really great in that deck. I mean, those River Run Minstrels essentially become a 2-for-3 Intrigue Power Bicon, which is pretty good. And, you know, playing Catlin or the Blackfish for a discount price is awesome. But I think right now, you probably won't include him unless you're going for like an all-in Blackfish kind of deck, because there just aren't that many Tullys. And you also might have to cut the Kennel Master because they're kind of in the same slot. So he's a C for me as well.
Oddly enough, I think I'm right in about that same boat in the kind of difficult to rate area. Gold is awfully important here, as we've been talking about. The ability to convert power to gold might make Stark pretty rich on the back of some of the other stuff they've got coming out. So tentatively, I want to rate him well, though also power feels much more important in second edition than it did in first. So it makes it hard for me to settle on him yet. I'm probably going to give him a C+, but I'm going to reserve the right to change that in the future.
Not much to add to the conversation. I'm a C minus. I just think that a non-unique Tully Septon, even with more House Tully stuff, is going to be hard to fit in a deck in the future. Yeah.
All right. Over to me. We have Rickon Stark. He is a 1 gold character. He is 1 strength, no icons. He is not loyal. He has the Lord trait and the interrupt. When the effects of a triggered ability with the word search in it would initiate, sacrifice Rickon Stark to cancel those effects. I mean, this guy is just a really solid card. 1 cost is awesome for setup. Canceling somebody's summons or something can be a huge tempo hit for them. So I think he's going to be probably a one of in most Stark decks for a while. So he's going to be a B, solid B, I think, for me. Maybe a B plus.
You know, I don't think I'm as high on him as that. I love that he's one cost. He's kind of a walking, setup-able event there. So I feel like there are decks that I probably want to include one copy of him, but he's also likely to be Kyle. When you compare him to something like Viserys, Rickon doesn't have an icon, and his ability is, I think, considerably less often to have a target for that. You know, I'm not super jazzed about it. If you do hit, it is a potentially big tempo, like you said. But in the end, this Rickon is probably just a C.
Oh, I think he's much better than an average card. Like, I'd give him a B. Like, a B card makes most decks, if not all decks, as a one of. Like, I don't know how you get past that effect. And sure, like, with Blood of the Dragon and all the other strength-reducing things with Targ, we're seeing that that's a matchup that's not favorable for Stark. But I don't, even just having him on the table hanging out as Claim Soak is fine. Like, I'd much rather kill a Rickon than a Reducer sometimes. So, yeah, he's a B. Greg?
If our criteria for rating a card is how often it shows up in a deck, I think that every Stark and every Banner to Wolf deck is going to run at least one copy of him. He's a non-loyal, one-cost character. And, you know, whether you're killing him from claim or using his ability, you're still running one copy of him. And if that's our criteria, I think he's in the A range. You know, if I'm saying I'm going to run one in every Stark deck, and I rated her an A, I'm essentially saying the same thing with Rickon. Am I going to run more than one? No. But I'm going to run at least one. So I guess, you know, it gets back to how we're rating cards. And if that's our criteria, he shows up in every Stark and Banner to Wolf deck, then I guess I'm going to give him an A minus just because he's obviously not doing anything in the challenge phase unless you get Shaggy Dog out. But if I get a one of in every deck, he's in that A minus range.
All right, next card. I think that's over to Will.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, sends it back to me for Winterfell.
You get a good card.
Yeah, 4-cost, unique location. It is loyal. Traits are the North and Winterfell. Each Stark character you control gets +1 strength and reaction after a challenge is initiated. Kneel Winterfell. Then each player with a non-Winter plot card revealed cannot trigger card abilities at the end of the challenge. It is 4 gold, and yes, that is pretty expensive, especially to first edition vets looking at this. But I think, much like the Wall has proven, a blanket boost like that gives enough of a board impact to let you kind of take that 4 gold tempo hit on the location in order to then get the other ability. And I think this other ability is a pretty strong option there to set things up for a Stark winter, well, maybe not winter, but I guess I should say an anti-summer deck. I don't know how to word that. But basically anybody that's not themselves winter to really keep them off of effects that they want to trigger. So I think this Winterfell is going to be quite good. I think I'm going to give it an A-.
I think that this card has serious potential. I have a feeling that Greg's not going to like it, but I think that this card could be game-breaking. 4-cost is a lot, sure, but the loyal characteristic there is a little bit more palatable for me. Passive strength boost in this game can't be understated, especially when Stark already has a nightmare of challenge math on the table. I think that that reaction ability is, like, just insane. And, you know what, I'm not even sure that I'm really that worried about it if they cancel it with a treachery, because that means it's a card out of their hand, and that gives me the ability to potentially use other stuff that's on the table. I think that this just creates such a huge headache for your opponent. I think that this card is an A. I think that this card will see a lot of play for a long time to come.
This card's an A, without a doubt. One of the things that's defining...
Oh, I'm surprised.
No, one of the things that's defining 2.0 right now is the direct kill in the challenge phase. the ability to remove their characters, you know, with that spot control, either with Put to the Sword or Tears of Lys or Dracarys or whatever it happens to be, that is highly defining the game. And for anyone who remembers a couple months ago, you know, I was talking about how I thought Tyrion was the most powerful because he bypassed the tough choices you had to make in the challenge phase because he was generating gold, you know, to be able to play those events almost at will. When you play a game against someone, you are always looking at their gold and asking yourself, if someone's attacking you in a military challenge, you're asking yourself, can they play Put to the Sword? You know, like, okay, they don't have 2 gold. I don't mind losing it. I've got the claim, so no big deal. Okay, but if they have 2 gold, that military challenge takes on a whole new complexion. Well, that's what, you know, Winterfell does, is it takes away that difficult decision when it comes to challenges. You know, you're basically walking into the challenge phase and saying, what scares me the most right now? Does Dracarys scare me the most? Does Put to the Sword scare me the most? Does Tears of Lys or Support of the People or whatever happens to be, you know? And assuming your opponent does not have a winner plot, you're basically saying, I'm going to turn off everything during this particular challenge so that that one thing that really scares me right now, or maybe multiple things during this challenge, I don't have to worry about it. And that is huge right now. Very, very huge. Obviously, this card will go down if the meta reacts in such a way that everyone's running multiple winter plots. So therefore, the usefulness of this will just have a meta shift and become less valuable. But right now, while there's not a huge inundation of winter plots, basically, people are playing what? 2. First Snow of Winter and Winds of Winter. Obviously, that's going to change here quickly as we get more. But right now, it's an A.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for everything, for all the reasons Greg just said, solid A card. And also, I mean, if you happen to be running winter plots yourself, stopping your opponent from triggering like Bodyguard and Iron Mines in the next pack, or Hand's Judgment or Treachery, I mean, you can push through all of that juicy Stark kill stuff. So definitely an A. All right, next up, Luke?
I get the Winterfell Heart Tree, another sneaky card. It's a 1-cost loyal location, non-loyal. Did I say loyal location? It meant to be non-loyal. It has the Old Gods and Winterfell trait, and I think it's interesting that in the last few packs, we've gotten a subtle inundation of religious traits, and so I would love to see that become a theme for a lot of decks to come. Between Old Gods, the 7... Drowned God, Ashai, or Ribor, sorry. Like, I think that would be really fun. And then the Winterfell trait. Reaction. After a phase begins, sacrifice Winterfell Heart Tree to choose a Stark card you control. Until the end of the phase, that card gains immune to opponent's plot effects. Well, we saw in first edition how powerful immune to plot effects can be, like Cat of the Canals and other things like that. And in second edition, things like First Snow of Winter, Wildfire Assault, Filthy Accusations. There's a lot of cards, plot cards particularly, that like can really, really mess with your tempo. And if you can predict it enough, you can really make use of this card. It's a skill cap card for sure. 1 gold location isn't too unaffordable. So like, I don't see why you wouldn't slot it in. I don't know. I think that you're going to find that you're cutting this card quite a bit between attachments and characters and Stark. The location slot just doesn't seem to do a whole lot of work for you in Stark, besides Econ and now Winterfell and the Gates, of course. But I don't know. I don't know how to rate this card. Like I said, I'm more of a tinkerer than anything, and I don't know that I'm going to play with this card until I see it just like bone me one game. Then I'm going to say, oh, okay, I'll play it. I'll give it a B- because I'm going to be a little bit high on it just because I think really good players are going to leverage this big time.
For the record, this doesn't work with First Snow since First Snow is a forced interrupt, which will happen before this.
That's true, because it's after a phase begins and the force reaction comes before the reaction. Yeah. Sure enough.
However, I do like the point, though, that it's going to interact with a number of plots. One of my, you know, first thoughts was actually with Fortified Position. And keep in mind that, you know, you're going to reveal Fortified during the plot phase, but when you trigger this, it would be at the beginning of the challenge phase, okay, since it's a reaction to a, you know, a a phase beginning. So you basically, there's this board full of blank dudes and you are choosing one of yours, preferably a really key character, you know, to get its ability where no one else does. It's just, I think right now it strikes me as a Shaga card, you know, just one of those, I'm going to come up with some really cool interactions with this. I don't know that it's going to be making the cut in any high level tournament decks. Unless someone comes up with some, you know, nasty combos. So I am going to rate it probably a C+. I'm going to say a C+. There will be some usage for it, but I think for the most part it's going to be in the combo decks.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with it right now is just space. The effect is solid, and maybe when we see Valor come back, if it's very popular, we may see a resurgence of this card. But the fact that it doesn't protect against first snow, and you kind of have to, you know, guess what plot they're going to play. And if, I mean, you have to trigger this. If you want to protect from something like Wildfire or Confiscation or March to the Wall, you have to trigger this before they reveal their plot. So they're just going to pick a different plot. I mean, if you pop this and say they can't confiscate your ice, it's going to give you one turn where you have ice, but then next turn they're going to save that confiscation and knock it off. It could be pretty impactful, sure, but I don't know. It's going to be tough to find room for this. So it's a C for me. I think maybe someday we'll see it a lot more, but can't find room for it right now.
Wow. It happened that I was last on this card, so I'm sort of jumping ahead to rebuttals. I think if I'm looking for like a one drop that is only barely going to make the cut in my deck, I choose this over Ricken. I think I number one love cheap locations in second edition, great for setup. And I think there are a ton of times in games where your opponent's next plot play on something like a Wildfire or a March to the Wall is very, very telegraphed. And either you force them out of that plot and, okay, actually you almost always force them out of that plot if you go ahead and trigger this. But either that saves that one, you know, Eddard or Tywin or whatever that was that you were sitting on that they were going to march away. And
well, it has to be a star card, so Tywin.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, not a Tywin, but Eddard or whatever. And now you've got time to get Chud on the board so they can't march it next turn. Or it forces them out of the Wildfire on the turn to try to equalize. I like this card a lot, and I think it's probably a solid B.
Dictating opponent's plot choices can be very powerful.
All right, on to the next card. Nymeria, 2-cost, non-loyal, Stark attachment with the Direwolf trait. Unique Stark character only. Attached character gains Intimidate. Action, pay 1 gold to attach Nymeria to a different character. Interesting that Stark is getting little control here through the Intimidate keyword, and as someone who has played Dawn on House Day Nights, this seems like a much better Intimidate granting card than that particular combo, and I kind of look forward to it, you know, with maybe some of the stand effects in combination with, you know, Rob or Jon Snow or whatever stand effect you want to use, getting multiple Intimidates out of a character or just moving it around and doing it on different characters seems incredibly strong to me. So do other than Dawn, do we even have any other cards that grant Intimidate at this time?
Not that I can think of.
Nope. So I think it has the potential
besides
to
Dawn.
Be very strong. I really want to see it in action. I'm going to give it a-. I think I'm probably trying to slot one into every deck right now, and maybe over time I find myself putting in more.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I think repeatable Intimidate cannot be overstated. The fact that you can move it to a different card in the same phase and get 2 uses that way, or through all the stand tech that Stark has. I think a lot, I mean, if you're building a Direwolf deck, this is great. If you're building a Tully deck, this is great. If you can get this on the Blackfish and have him turned on, like, your opponent might as well just, like, pick up their cards, because you have a not kneeling to attack character with Renown and Intimidate. I hear Bob with Lightbringer is a pretty ridiculous combo, and that's limit once per phase, so for the stand. So yeah, this card's very good. Also very good on Catelyn, because she's going to have a lot of strength pretty quick. So yeah, great card. A-.
I've got to say that I love this little theme of the direwolf attachments to move back and forth. Just that little Nedley thought about them running around with different members of the family. Dig, you know, they're just puppies. But I think it's a good card as well. I agree that it's a very solid effect. So I'm probably going to give it a solid B.
I guess I'll split the difference. I think that it's a B+ card for me, just because the unique character only is a little bit prohibitive, but you're going to be running a ton of uniques in Stark. I don't know. I mean, 2 cost is fine for Intimidate. I mean, like, what a great keyword to get for 2 cost. I don't know how many copies of this you're going to be running, and if you're going to be running all the search tech to be able to get Direwolf cards. So I think that she's a B+, because I think you see her in a lot of Stark decks, but not every single one. That's me?
Yeah.
Who's next?
Next card is me. All right. We have Needle. It is a unique attachment. 1 gold. It is a weapon, and it is Stark character only. Attached character gets +2 strength. Interrupt. When attached character is sacrificed, sacrifice Needle to return that character to your hand instead of placing it in your discard pile. This card is really solid. There are a lot of Stark characters that have sacrifice effects now. Arya, Jory, Bran, anybody with Jon Snow. And, I mean, even just the fact that he gives +2 strength, I mean, like, that's a Widow's Wail right there. Granted, it doesn't have ambush, which is the best part of Widow's Wail, but +2 strength is nothing to sneeze at. And the interrupt can be good if you get it on somebody important, like Bran. Pretty good on him, or new Arya, or Jory. All those are pretty solid targets. And even just to, like, keep the Blackfish out of Dracarys range, it's a great use for it. So, I think it's a really solid card. I think it's probably going to be, like, probably a B-, C+, somewhere in there. Solid card. Not for every deck, but pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of an okay card. I do like the strength boost, for sure. The fact that it is an attachment, of course, being nice to throw off some degree to his stuff, but maybe the direwolves that move are better for that. For its interrupt, you know, there's a very specific subset of Starks that, you know, sacrifice for their own ability that are ones that you're going to want to get back, like Arya's and Bran's. And that's just not a real big pool at the moment, so I'm not real high on Needle, though it might get better later. I'm probably just going to give it C- right now.
Oh, I think that another attachment in Stark that gives a passive strength boost is more challenge math. So if you're throwing this down on the Blackfish and all that stuff, you know, like the Dracarys range that we were all talking about, or you're throwing this down on Cat even, and it's more protection from the Sea Stone Chair. And it's like, I think that this card is a solid B- at worst. I think that it's totally worth it.
I rate this about a C. It's just competing with so many other attachments right now in Stark, you know, between the direwolves and ice and the neutral ones, you know, granting icons and seal of the hand. It's competing with too many other cards for me. So, you know, I'm pretty much ignoring the strength boost on many of those and saying, what else is it doing? And this one, you know, has this kind of funky effect of returning sacrificed characters to hand, which, you know, sounds like it could be good, but I think in actual play, it's going to feel very, wow, I just spent a lot to not do as much as I thought I was going to do. You know, that sort of thing. Just sort of like, if you want to get a character back, just play Summer, right? Or something like that. So, you know, I'm just going to rate it a C. I think more than anything, people are going to look for some Shaga ways to play with this card. But as of right now, I don't think it's going to make its way in a lot of decks.
All right, Frozen Solid. This is a non-unique non-loyal Stark attachment for one cost. It's a condition and non-limited location printing cost 3 or lower only. Terminal. Treat attached locations printed text box as if it were blank, except for traits. I mean, this here to me is going to be the reason to play Stark or Banner to Stark for the foreseeable future. There are such strong choices for this. We've reviewed Tower of the Hand, we've got Laws of Punishment, the Red Keep, heck, Seastone Chair, just on and on. There's a lot of great choices that this answers.
Like, this card is super solid out of Banner of the Wolf for sure. In Stark main house, it competes for other attachment slots, which I don't like. And one of the other things I don't really like other than the Targ matchup, which we see that, like, clearly that's going to be the new hard counter for Stark, given the influx of cards. The two houses that I really want to hit with it, Baratheon and Greyjoy, have innate attachment hate. Baratheon with Maester Crescent to be able to get rid of conditions, and Greyjoy with We Do Not Sow. I don't know. I mean, that doesn't prohibit me from playing it. It's still a fantastic card. And obviously the new Tower of the Hand, like, I'm going to Frozen Solid that thing every single time. But I don't know. I don't know how to rate this card either, because there are so many good attachments to include in a deck. I got to start thinking of attachments in Stark as event slots, really. So I guess this card's still a B for me, because I think that you're always going to consider it. Even if you end up cutting it at some point, it's going to be one of the last cards you cut. And most of the time, you're still going to find a way to make room for it. Greg?
My general feeling on it is the conditions should not be ignored. You know, the fact that it doesn't hit limited and it can't hit these four cost locations, of which there are a couple notable ones in the game already. And you know, so I'm wondering, like, how often you're going to, you know, play a game where it just sits in your hand and you can't even use it. And maybe you don't care, you know, maybe for the games when you're able to drop it on a Red Keep or on a Plaza of Punishment, it's worth the games when you're not able to use it at all. But, you know, that's kind of my thought right now. You know, it doesn't hit attachments like the old, you know, 1.0 version did. And so I'm a little concerned that there's actually going to be some decks that doesn't make the cut right now. Now, maybe a year from now when we see more impactful locations just because of the increased card pool, you know, it's going to become better. So right now I'm actually putting it as a C plus, with the understanding that probably a year from now, this is a, you know, A minus card.
I just realized that Viserys also discards attachments, and those are the three matchups that you really want this in. So I'm going to drop down to a C plus as well. Sorry.
Yeah, I think this card is a lot less good than it was in first edition. There are some games that I've played where my opponent has played literally zero locations that this will hit over the course of the game. And that has happened a fair number of times, I would say. I mean, the Lannister jumper deck, at least my version, I think played one copy of Lannisport, and that was the only location that this would be able to... Shadowblack.
No, like, Shadowblack, I was going to say.
Yeah, all right. My point is I've played decks that play Euro non-limited locations with cost 3 or lower, and this could just be a dead card. And like Luke said, there are a lot of houses that have innate attachment control that are just going to make this card worthless. And I don't know if it's really worth including in a lot of your decks. So time will tell. We'll see if it's worth it for those times where you can actually get it off onto something. But it's a C plus for me too right now.
Will
already did it. Next card.
I started that one. It's me.
It's me. I get all the cards that I don't really know how to rate. As Hard as Winter is a one cost event. Play only if there is a winter plot in your used file. Reaction. After a Stark character you control is sacrificed or killed, put a Stark character with equal or lower printed cost into play from your hand. This card has the potential to be super impactful to where you don't lose tempo. And if Stark gets more come into play effects like the River Run Minstrel, then this card gets even better. The condition of having a winter plot in your used pile can be a little bit restrictive depending on what kind of deck you're running. But I think that this card can be really good if leveraged the right way with the right build. I'm going to, because it's going to be competing with both attachment and event slots, like I'm going to hedge my bets and give it a C plus.
I agree that at this point in time, it's kind of hard to rate this card. You know, looking at it, I'm trying to sit there and say, what is it really doing for me? Okay, it's basically bypassing. It's basically an income card is what it is. Okay, mm-hmm. But it's a very conditional income card. You know, I have to have a winner plot in my use pile. One of my start characters has to be sacrificed or killed. I have to pay a gold for this. And then a start character that happens, you know, to be in my hand gets to get put into play. That also has to have equal or lower printed cost. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, keeping all that straight. I tend to want to say that's just too many conditions, that too many things have to happen to make this a usable card. So right now, I'm going to say D. Now, maybe at some point in time, someone in a game kills off their Eddard and drops in Catelyn, you know, or something like that. And I'm just like, ugh. That sucks. But I think in most games, you know, let me rephrase that. If this was in most Stark decks, I think that, you know, for every one game someone pulls off an awesome move like that, there's like seven other games where this card sits in your hand and you just can't use it.
Yep, I agree. I think maybe someday when a fully, like, full-on sacrifice deck starts to really come into effect, this could maybe see some play there. I think Snowed Under is a pretty solid opener for a lot of decks. It's a 5-gold plot that basically lets you win initiative a lot of the time on turn one. So it's okay, but again, it's just too many conditions. And Stark still has an intrigue problem, and if they've emptied your hand, except for like this card, if you top deck it, you're really annoyed. So I think it's a D-plus right now.
Yeah, man. You guys probably remember that I love this type of interesting pop characters in the play effect from first edition. This harkens back to some of my very favorite things in the Rearminator deck, but it is just a very terrible version of them. Greg did a great job of illustrating the sheer number of things you have to line up to actually play this. You're still not getting any sort of real card advantage, just hopefully some income. And so I just can't like it. I hope something happens to make it good later on, but this is just a D.
I'm still going to stay in the C range. I don't know. There's something to this. I think that there's something that's going to happen with this card. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm going to stay in the C range somewhere. Is it Greg?
Greg's card.
Oh, it is me, huh? All right. Hold on just a second. All right. The pack survives a loyal zero-cost event. Interrupt. When the effects of an opponent's event would initiate, sacrifice a direwolf card or kneel two Stark characters to cancel those effects. Event cancel should not be looked at lightly right now, especially a zero-cost event cancel. Well, zero in reference to gold cost. There's some more cost to this card. You're either sacrificing a direwolf card or kneeling two characters. That's not light, but this is a great combination with, say, Robb Stark, you know, where maybe you kneel some dudes and you know they're all going to get stood back up. The question is it replacing Hand's Judgment and is it replacing Bran Stark? And it is loyal, so it is replacing one of those two for all practical purposes. And I'm not sure you're playing Bran and Hand's Judgment and this. And yet at the same time, I don't necessarily see this card replacing either of those. So that's the hardest thing about it right now. I don't know. I think I'm probably rating it a C minus, although I am welcoming the caveat that I may look back and say, whoa, I was wrong on this. This is actually a much more reliable cancel effect than what I thought.
I like it. I think for me, it replaces Hand's Judgment if I'm playing it in Stark, just because I really have a lot of trouble hanging on to gold, or rather I have a lot of trouble wanting to use that gold on Hand's Judgment without throwing off my other plans that I've got going for either, you know, moving Lady or Nymeria or paying for Winter's Coming or put to the sword or what have you. And I think there are times where I'm pretty okay sacking like a direwolf pup or lady potentially to cancel, you know, a put to the sword or something, or even just a hand's judgment of my opponents, or treachery or something like that. So I like it. They already have Bran, so I don't know how often we'll see this card, but I think it's solid. I think it's like, oh man, C plus B minus range for me. I'll say B minus, because if you can't sack something, you could maybe kneel a couple chuds if you needed to.
Hey, Patrick, I'm willing to back you up on this. I love the flexibility of it. I've really come around. I was pretty down on Hand's Judgment before, and I've come around to the event cancel being much stronger than I expected. So I think this is going to be good. It's very flexible, with no gold cost and multiple other means of payment. So I expect this to make a couple copies in quite a few days. So I'm willing to go B minus as well.
Can't add much to that B minus conversation. I think that even on a turn where, like, say you're going second because you really wanted to get some of your kill off and stuff, and you have a couple characters standing with not the right icons, and they play an event that's going to absolutely screw you, I think that this card could be super invaluable, especially if Bran's already been removed or killed. I think this is a B minus at the worst. I think that this card's really, really good.
All right, next card we have an event. It is Arya's Gift. It is non-loyal. It is zero costs, and it is action. Move an attachment from a Stark character you control to another eligible character you control. I really like this card. I think, you know, obviously there's the, you know, the direwolf attachments can already move, but moving them for free, that's fine. Moving ice, if somebody managed to control your character that you put ice on, that's always super annoying in the Barrow matchup. You slide ice on Rob and Mel comes out and kneels him. Now you can move it to somebody else. Or I think the much better application of this is moving negative attachments. I mean, if somebody puts Milk of the Poppy on Rob, you can move it over to Tumblestone Knight and just have a party. So all of those icon removing attachments are a lot less effective when you have this. I think this can actually probably replace some other attachment control in Stark. If you're running maybe one or two Rattle Shirts Raiders and one or two of this, you probably don't have to run Confiscation in Stark anymore. And I really like not running Confiscation because I'm sick of that plot being in all of my decks.
Yep.
Man, moving a negative attachment is okay, but I've got to say, I don't think this is worth a card on its own for the effect. It's not going to be worth a slot in the deck. 9 times out of 10, I think this is a D.
I think that Patrick makes a good point about Confiscation, because I hate having to play that plot too in certain decks, but I gotta side with Will. Like, I think that this card is getting cut like 99 times out of 100. I think that this card is a, because I made fun of it earlier, I'll go ahead and do it. I'll give it a D plus.
Oh, I forgot to rate it a C plus for me.
Wow.
I actually like this card, but I will say that it's a meta card. And what I mean by that is when the meta game moves in such a way that attachments are being played a lot, it's a fantastic card. And it is very versatile. You're not just moving negative attachments, you're moving positive attachments as well. And for zero cost, I think that that's nothing to sneeze at. You know, whether it be, you know, maybe you have ice on one of your characters and your opponent Melisandre'd that character down. Now you move ice to someone else so that you can actually trigger the ice. Or, you know, as was mentioned, moving a negative attachment to a character where you don't care that that attachment is on that character. I think that while attachments are still being heavily played, they'd be a phenomenal card. If we go through a meta phase where people have stopped using attachments, then you know, that's a little bit different. But I like it. You know, how many decks is it going to make? I don't know if it's going to be like a show me event, like maybe slot in one, just, you know, just so once you've played it, your opponent now has to think, you know, are there going to be more copies coming, or is it strong enough to, you know, have multiple copies of the deck, especially, you know, with these direwolves that you're already paying gold to move around. Now you can do it without paying gold and just play this card. I'm actually putting it in the B range. I think it's going to make more decks than we think. Right now, I'll give it a B minus.
Ooh. All right. Okay. Last one.
Sends it to me for the last one, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Real loud. Okay. 3, 2, 1. All right. This is going to be our last start card in the pack. This is a plot, A Time for Wolves. It's loyal, of course. 3 gold, 1 initiative, 1 claim, and 6 reserve. The winner trait. When revealed, search your deck for a direwolf card. Reveal it and add it to your hand. If that card's printing cost is 3 or lower, you may put it into play instead. Shuffle your deck. Very, very similar to its first edition iteration. And I think there's some solid choices to drop into play. I think it pushes us towards putting the attachment direwolves into play, which is pretty interesting, I think. But should be pretty good. As we said, those attachments look pretty tasty. So I'm going to give Time for Wolves and its search and income ability here probably an A minus. I still like the card advantage, even if you're not going straight up direwolf.
I mean, all those reasons are good reasons. It's a positive trait for Stark right now. 1 initiative isn't great. 1 claim is average. 3 gold isn't great, but if you leverage that with getting, you know, a summer and put her into play and grab something else, that's a significant boost. Or even grab Nymeria and throw her on somebody, or, you know, any of the other direwolf cards that we have. Even just grabbing a Grey Wind or a Wolves of the North and adding them to hand isn't bad. I think that this card's super versatile, and obviously in a wolf deck it's an obvious include, if not two of, in a wolf deck, because there's no plot deck limit. 6 reserve is pretty good. I'm not quite ready to give it an A yet, but I think this card's going to be sweet. I'll give it a solid B.
There are right now, I believe, 2 plots in the game that can give you an effective 6 gold plus card advantage. And this now becomes the third one, in that you can get an effective 6 gold as well. You can give yourself a card. If you go search out Summer, you're potentially giving yourself 2 cards. And I just think that that is an extremely powerful effect in the game right now. So I am going to actually give it an A minus. I think almost every Stark deck right now is probably running at least a couple direwolves, maybe not a ton, but at least a couple. And the ability to go search it and put it in play is just nothing to sneeze at right now. So I am going to say A minus.
Yeah. I think this is a really solid card. I wish it hadn't lost the initiative. It used to be 3-3-1. I don't really see why it had to go down. Its stat line is pretty terrible now, but it's a pretty powerful effect. I'd say if you're playing Summer and you're playing Nymeria, this is definitely a card to look at. And if you're not, why are you not doing that? Because those are both very good cards. So, yeah, I'm all about it. I'd say A minus is right where I am. Also, it's winter, so that's pretty great too.
So what do you think, Will?
Well, there we have it. I mean, that is the start cards in the box. You know, it looks pretty tasty overall. And, okay, sorry, there's a lot of noise of some kind. Anyone else hearing that?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, overall, that's the Stark box. Well, the Stark half of the Stark box, and I think it looks awfully tasty. It's kind of funny. We were going to go back to really hammer some folks on earlier thoughts.
And actually, the one that I really wanted to do, I turned out to be the last person anyway. So I really got that one in there. Past that, I think that Arya is probably a little lower looking back than the general opinion. And I'm going to say Wolves of the North look strong, but that icon stuff worries me more and more as I think about it. So prove me wrong, guys, but I'm worried.
Is it my turn? I don't know how this works.
Yeah,
I think so. We didn't really establish that
okay.
beforehand.
The only thing, I mean, I think that we got a little bit of debate on the other things that we talked about. So the only things that I really, I don't know. I guess I think Arya's gift is like super limited just based on space alone. Like that's not a card that I'm automatically considering for a deck. Unless I'm super attachment heavy, which means that I'm probably running light on events and locations. I don't know. And then time for wolves. Like the only reason why I was in the B range rather than the A range, even though the effect is strong and the card advantage can be really good, is that I find that initiative really, really matters right now in second edition. And there's just a lot of other plots to play. You only get seven. And if you're not running a direwolf centric deck, then I'm not as willing to play it yet.
Craig?
I don't really have anything. Honestly, I stopped listening to you guys.
That's so fair.
Yeah, I don't really have too much either. I think that Arya is going to be, just her icons alone are going to be solid. And if you're playing a full-on sacrifice deck or you play Needle, I think she's going to be pretty good. So, but yeah. That's all I got.
Winter is coming, y'all.
Winter is coming.
Props and or slops. Kind of funny. I'm not sure I have anything at the moment this week. I've been so busy, I've barely been able to figure anything out. I spent this whole weekend at Justin Fox's bachelor party. Oh yeah, I should probably prop that, right? No, it was a good time. Got to meet a whole bunch of his groomsmen I've never met before. He's getting married here in 2 weeks now. Some of you old-timers may remember him as Geppetto on the boards, a renowned Stark fanatic. So only fitting to bring him up on this particular episode. Props to you, good sir. He's also my best man at my wedding, 2 weeks after his. So there you go.
Props to the Indianapolis Regional having 58 players. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Slops to the folks in the Indianapolis Regional who didn't do the math correctly and took intentional draws at 4-1. Props to Aaron again for becoming a new dad because it's the greatest thing in the world. Props to me and Will for getting married this summer. And
yeah, man.
Props to the Second Sons. I'll just leave it at that.
There you go. I'll be curious to see how Second Sons was. I'm going to listen to it tomorrow.
I listened to the first couple minutes, and it's everything as advertised.
Sure.
Which is to say, I don't really know what that is.
Well, props to new cards. I'm excited to get building.
Heck yeah. Greg, anything in your neck of the woods?
No, sorry. Like I said, I stopped listening to you guys.
Okay.
Props to Greg's honesty.
Yep.
Yeah. Nothing if not an honest man. Well then, in that case, I suppose that closes another chapter of the White Book.
Okay, hold on. Someone is sanding something?
I don't hear anything else, Will.
Yeah, I don't either.
No, I definitely hear somebody sanding something in the background. Or sawing something, perhaps.
My house is quiet because my fiance just left, so...
Yeah, I'm sitting in a room with no other noise.
Weird.
Weird. Must be a ghost in the call.
Could be.
Creepy. It's a time wraith. Okay. Sorry, I just watched the flash. All right. So 3, 2, 1, go.